Entree Architect Academy is a digital program and private online community of architects working together to build a better profession through business, leadership, and personal success. Entree Architect Academy. Build a better business. Be a better architect. Learn more at entrearchitect.com. Entree Architect Podcast, episode 169. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. One of the struggles I hear often from architects is that the general public is ignorant of what we do as architects. You know, if people don't know what we do, how will they ever value our services? How can we better educate and share our purpose with the world, and in doing so, increase that perceived value of the profession throughout the world? Well, this week, I'm talking with an architect based in New York City and Hong Kong, a founder of a thriving architecture and design firm, who has found a way to educate society on the value of architects and architecture. One child at a time. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, Architecture for Children, with architect Vicky Chan. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, FreshBooks, NCARB, BQE Software, and RCAT. FreshBooks. Get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. And NCARB. Helping architects reach their career goals. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/NCARB. And BQE Software. The makers of ArchiOffice, office and project management software designed specifically for architects. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/BQE. And RCAT, the leading online resource for free building product information. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/RCAT. Vicky Chan, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's good to have you here. Vicky is the founder of Avoid Obvious Architects, which I love that name. Just right there alone, I can't wait to have this conversation. You have offices in New York and Hong Kong. The firm's pushing sustainable design for buildings and cities with a focus on combining art and green technology. And he's also founded a volunteering organization called Architecture for Children, which is really what I want to get into most here, to teach architecture on a weekly basis, and has taught over 3,000 children about sustainable design and architecture, which is really, really amazing. We were actually introduced, Vicky, by Jared Smith, who some people, if you're on the internet and you are on social media, you may know him as Architect Owl. When I reached out to my Entree Architect community on Facebook, we have a Facebook group of all small firm architects, I had a friend who asked me if I had some good resources for people who are interested in sharing architecture with children. And I didn't have anything, you know, specifically come to mind, which was, you know, disturbed me a little bit. I wanted to have that resource right at my fingertips. And I couldn't find that. And I did a couple of Google searches and didn't find anything very specific. So I went to my community and I asked, and I got overloaded with advice and information and resources. And one of them was Architecture for Children, referred by Jared Smith. And we connected in the group and talked a little bit. And so I wanted to invite you here and talk about your journey a little bit. So let's get started with that. Let's start with your personal story, your origin story. Go back to where you discovered architecture and what inspired you to become an architect. And then tell us your story from that point to where you find yourself today.
Cool. Well, first of all, I actually grew up in Hong Kong, and then my family moved to New York about 20 years ago. So I went to school in New York, went to high school in New York. I always loved art and science. And at the time, it didn't come to me that architecture was actually I guess, the best combination of the both subjects. And when I was going through college, and architecture just like, oh wow, look at what they do. And I just love the idea of being able to do everything I do really best, and to be able to combine them. And then later on, throughout this whole academic study, I see different things, I learn different things, and I really fall in love with it and decided to stay in the career. And I actually went and worked for many big firms like Wood Spaghetti, SOM, after graduation. And then at the time, I was doing really, really long hours. And at one point I was actually doing 110 hours a week. I got
Oy.
so sick
Yeah.
I got so sick and then not only that, like after that competition, it was a competition, we lost. And then I just was devastated. I just lost my mind. I'm like, ah, oh, all these hours I went in to work for someone else, and then they took all the credit, and not only that, we lost. So
Yeah.
I wasn't even paid for the overtime. So I decided to, switch and then get out and started my own thing. And that was actually kind of like the personal reason of doing it. The second reason of doing it was actually kind of related to the volunteering thing that I wanted to do. In a firm, it's very hard for me to say no to a client because I'm not the boss. And it's also very hard to advocate ideas that I wanted to, tell the world. I founded my own thing. I was able to tell my client the things that I wanted to say, the green message specifically. How can we actually make, more sustainable buildings, or even smaller design, different things like that. And not only that, I was able to, take time out of the week, usually on a weekday, and then go to a local school and then start teaching children about architecture. Many times we focus on a scientific like subject, like either climate change or wind energy, or let's say the last week we did a green roof. So we will be able to do many things together, and then they learn about the science, they learn about the physics. The idea is that not only, well, most of them won't become architect. They will be interested in architecture and good design and sustainable design, but they won't may not get into our field. But that's okay. My idea is that when they grow up and get into the position of being a decision makers, being a leaders, or whatever they do, they have that idea of green design in the back of their head, so that. I mean, that's my way of actually influencing the society, hoping that they can actually do something bigger. And I mean, as of actually just this weekend, their work actually just won an award in Italy. Our volunteering organization just won an award in Italy.
Wow.
So that in a way, I mean, I was really thankful. But I think my kid, I haven't seen them yet since we won. I think my kid will be like hyper excited. I mean, one of the message that I mean, by winning that, the message I've been able to tell the children is that, look what you can do. It was an adult competition, but you're able to beat other people, not only because you're doing the right thing, but you work hard on it. So I think we are sending a really positive message to some of the children. And some of the school we taught are also, let's say, they have special need. And one of the, a couple of students we had was actually on wheelchair, and they had hard time actually making paper models because it was just a little bit more difficult for them. But they managed it really well, very refined model, very clean and sharp corners. The idea I learned from that is that sometimes I asked them to make buildings, and then they a lot of if I go to a different school or regular school. People would tell me, I want to make this robot. I want to make this Star Wars thing, all this cartoon that they look at. But when I go to this special needs school, they said, oh, they want to make hospitals. And at the moment, I was like, oh, wow. I run a business. I have to make money. Sometimes I lost my intention of why I'm doing it, but teaching children actually refresh what I do or what my partner do. Like, we are able to actually get just the real, meaning of architecture. Yeah. So we learn from the children, and there's a really good story. I was actually, another part of it is like from teaching is that we actually learn about presentation from children or different ideas as well. One of the children I was doing bridges and telling them about different structure and different type of bridge. And then I was talking to them about like suspension bridge. And then I asked them, like, what do you feel or what do they look like? And one of the kids told me, oh, the Brooklyn Bridge looks like a big smile. And I was like, at that point, I realized, oh, wow, like if I can ever present like the way they present in the most innocent way, like look at the big smile bridge. And I feel like I would actually win all the competition or win all the jobs because like that innocent way of thinking, like I sometimes lost it. Like it just gets so complicated with all this like fancy idea. But yeah, right. Maybe that is actually just the best by simplifying it. Yeah. And I was one of the children also gave me some really like crazy answer. A couple months ago, people were all doing all this like Pokemon thing,
Pokemon Go.
And so I asked the children, hey, what do you feel, how do you think we can actually solve the world's energy problem? And one of the children was so obsessed with like his Pokemon, and he said, oh, if Pokemon is actually a wheel, we will get unlimited amount of electricity. And I was like, oh, wow, that is so crazy. Like, I mean, it's a crazy thought, but at the same time, if I really think about it, it really ties into all this like bioelectricity and all this stuff together. So, I mean, of course, they are only 10 right now, but, who knows, man? I mean, like, those crazy ideas may actually become, like, true, like, not, I guess, in the near future. Yeah. So, in many ways, I just find it, like, very, like, fruitful. Like, I find it to be a win-win situation that I volunteer. Like, I learn something from them, and they learn something from me. And hopefully, when they grow up, they get to do the same thing that I'm doing.
Yeah, it goes both ways. You inspire them and they inspire you. First of all, I have lots of questions. So the first question is your inspiration. I mean, you wanted to launch your own firm and you had this idea. Where did this idea for architecture for children come from? What inspired you to do that?
I was actually, when I was in college, I worked for this program coordinator. They run this program in the university and send all this university student to different local school to teach them math and English. But there's only so much you can do or have fun with just two specific subjects. And then this coordinator first got in touch with me and said, hey, I got a side program. Her name is Peggy Fagan. And she got this like side program in Brooklyn, and she's mostly doing this for low-income children. And she said, hey, why don't you just do a section for us on specifically on architecture? So I firstly began, like that was, I've been teaching for 14 years now. So that was just a long time ago, we began with this idea to teach children architecture. So at the time, it wasn't actually me who actually started or founded this idea. It was someone invited me into their class and start doing it. And after that, I realized that it's actually very difficult in many ways. When I won't go in, I was just thinking to talk to the kid, but they don't really listen to you. You have to come up with a very simple presentation that they can finish in 45 minutes.
Right,
if they
right.
don't finish, they don't learn anything. So I end up getting deeper every time, like how do I refine the idea so that they take away with like a really important keyword or important idea? And how do we do something that they don't actually end up making a lot of waste? At the time, I actually went to Pratt. So a lot of Pratt students was actually next to us, around us. They also showed a lot of Pratt students were actually making art using like very sustainable material, like they were making like just clay out of like different food that you can find. And I got an idea from that as well. So I learned from all the people around me, hey, what if I can actually you know, build up on that, all the material that we use to build paper model, either like newspaper that we collected, or old paper that we find, or a couple of weeks ago we built bridges out of like pasta, like spaghetti stick. And you know, I saw a lot of big firms have done that with kit, but ours was actually a bit more different. We actually do all the joint with like flour. So they were just mixing everything with all pure food that you can eat. And then in order to hold up the weight, we got a tomato. So it's tomato and spaghetti. It's just like they actually end up taking it home to prepare dinner. And so that idea of being able to come up with something simple and they can finish on time and get away actually helped me with my own design process as well. Again, go back to what I said, like finding the most innocent way to present a sustainable idea. I guess it's probably what everyone needs right now. Yeah, when a lot of people are so confused about climate change, but if we can just simplify it, I think it's just very easy for everyone.
Right. So the essence of bringing it right down to the essence, the pureness of what it is, make it so simple that it's impossible to not understand.
Yeah. And the and for other inspiration of with you know doing it with children is also sometimes like it really like I also learn from different culture while doing it with our children, like we have been teaching in Hong Kong and also in New York. And in New York, like children are in general more creative, like they are exposed to more art in general in New York. So at one point I was doing like this like towers that were really close to each other. And I asked them like, what do they think about it and how do they wanted to react to this like architecture? And one of the child told me that like, oh, what if like it looks almost like the Spider-Man can actually climb between the two walls and go up like between these two wall towers. And then I asked the same question to children here in Hong Kong, and the children I'm talking about is actually like 6 years old, and this children in Hong Kong told me that if there's an earthquake, like these two towers are too close to each other, that they may actually just collapse. And then it gave me like something kind of interesting thing about this cultural thing that in education, like you know, one culture are so creative that they have this crazy idea, but you know, at the same time, like I don't know, maybe they didn't say anything that are specifically technical. But in a different culture in Asia, you know, people are so technical and they're so bright and they're so like just everything was correct. But yet, like this 6 year old boy didn't actually tell me anything that I found it interesting or creative. He just gave me the proper answer. So in many ways, I feel like in this two culture, like I'm giving a little bit of what is actually missing in what they have, like maybe in New York, like maybe I have to focus a bit more on the technical side, give them a bit more knowledge about what they need because they already so creative, they know what they want. But in Hong Kong, like I'm trying to do the opposite. I try to encourage them to fail, encourage them to get out of the envelope, to really try something that they don't know, rather than giving me this like perfect answer. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. So do you do this? You said you do this weekly. You teach every
week. Yes, I do it weekly. Yeah, I've been doing it with three different local schools. Sometimes we do it twice a week, but it can get a bit too intense for me. We have like volunteers as well. They're not necessarily like architects. Some people study interior design. Some people study advertising. Some people study mathematics. They come in and do things with their children, so it's great. But it is very challenging. I mean, it's running an organization, even though it's a nonprofit, but it's still like running a firm. Finding people to help you right. or to keep on like doing it is also difficult. Because we do it on a weekly week, we do it during the weekday, and a lot of people work. So it's just very challenging to be able to find people who have time. So it's usually easier during the weekend, but student doesn't want to show up on the weekend.
Right. So are you introduced into the curriculum, or are you doing this as an extracurricular activity?
After school program right now. Okay. Yeah. So I write my own program and then I give it to the school. The school look at it and they think it's okay. And then I would just do this whole semester thing and then with the same group of students. And sometimes we take them out to the field trip. Like in New York, we've been to the top of the rock. Here in Hong Kong, we also do it near the harbor. We actually had a joint event with the AIA. The AIA local chapter here in Hong Kong had all these architects here come to the event, and then we were doing sketch with the children, and then the children were having a mini competition among themselves, and all the architects have to critique them, and then we vote on the best drawing that they had of Hong Kong, and then we actually gave out a kind of like small AIA mini version AIA award to all the children. So that was actually pretty fun, yeah. And we were really hoping to do more similar events as well with the AIA. They are very active in terms of promoting local design, citizens design, and so forth and so on. Now our work is actually on display right now at the AIA headquarters in Washington D.C. With the children,
the national headquarters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So those are so in many ways I found them very supportive as well.
Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect: RCAT, FreshBooks, NCARB, and BQE Software. You already know all about RCAT and their free BIM objects and their CAD details and their specifications and product information, all free, ready for you to use. Well, today I want to share something new from RCAT. It's called Charette. Charette is a tool for sharing and collaborating with your colleagues and clients online in real time. You can upload photos and files, share specs and product information directly from the RCAT database, as well as from other sources on the internet. I've been playing with Charette in beta for a while now, and it's really cool. And now it's available to you. I encourage you to go check it out. Visit RCAT online and click the Charette icon right there on the homepage. And like everything offered at RCAT, Charette is a free tool for us small firm architects too. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/RCAT. 192 hours. You wish you had that much free time? That works out to about 2 business days every month. And when you're a small firm architect using FreshBooks cloud accounting software, that's the amount of administration time that you could save in 2017. That's time that you can spend doing the things you love, like being an architect. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks to access FreshBooks for free. And be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Do you know someone in your firm who's always dreamed of getting licensed, but was unable to complete the experience requirements? Well, maybe that person's you. Now you can get back on track with NCARB's new AXP portfolio. With this option, seasoned professionals can complete the Architectural Experience Program, the AXP, formerly known as the IDP, by submitting an online portfolio. Along with meeting your state's education and examination requirements, the portfolio will help you and your employees get one step closer to becoming a licensed architect. Learn more about NCARB's AXP portfolio at entrearchitect.com/NCARB. One of the most often requested resources here at Entree Architect is project management software. How do we keep our projects and our people organized while we grow as entrepreneur architects. BQE Software, an AIA Advantage partner, and the makers of ArchiOffice will show us how. ArchiOffice is the only office and project management software designed specifically for architects. It will help us manage people and projects and allow us to focus on designing great architecture. Whether you're working remotely or on site, ArchiOffice allows you to monitor the status of your projects and tasks and send out invoices in an accurate and timely manner. Entree Architect podcast listeners can get a fully functional 15-day trial of ArchiOffice today at entrearchitect.com/BQE. RCAT, FreshBooks, NCARB, and BQE Software, please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. You said that you do this and it goes both ways, that you are inspiring these mm-hmm. children to learn more about design, learn more about architecture, and that sort of broadens their horizon, looks at, sort of understands more about architecture, more about design, sustainability, green design. So as they become older, that is an influence in the decisions they make.
Yes.
Can you point to an example of the reverse where their inspiration, their simplicity, their innocence has inspired you in some of the work that you've done? Can you talk about something specific that's influenced you?
Yes, yes. I think it was actually two projects. One of them were talking about a wind turbine, and then she proposed a wind turbine for her house, and then she said that what if the wind turbine, when it is not in use, you can actually turn it down and make it into a ceiling fan. It kind of influenced some of the work that we do. Not literally turning a wind turbine into a ceiling fan, but we were looking at some wind technology and question how can we imply dual function to some of this engineering item so that they don't look or work specifically well for one function. Maybe they have multiple functions that integrated into our design and architecture. And the other one that was actually quite interesting was one of the child told us that they wanted a hole in the middle of their house so that during the nighttime they can actually open the ceiling and look at the star. I found that presentation to be very just direct and inferential. I actually had presented it in a very similar way in my one of our projects. And that two things that actually kind of strike me in many ways. Although I'm in Hong Kong, but the U.S. presidency, the whole campaign actually kind of broadcast almost every day here in Hong Kong. So a lot of children know about the current U.S. president. And then they, I don't want to get too much into politics, but one of the kids actually just built a bunker. He built a bunker. He said, what if there's a nuclear war, you'll be able to go underneath, is it below? He built here's the table, and he almost built an L shape, and then it kind of cantilevered underground. And then he told me that this is the way for him to put his family, keep them safe and this and that. But that in many ways kind of give me back something to work with. Look at the society that we have created, through the media, through the news, and through the message that we are trying to tell the next generation, that maybe I have to work harder to tell them something more positive, something more sustainable, something more useful that they can work with. Not to say a bunker is not useful, but I just found it a bit pessimistic that as a 10-year-old that this is the image that he had in his mind. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting how children are not filtered, that they say what they think. And they're thinking from the things they're being influenced, the things they're seeing and they're hearing and they're living through. And so, when a child, responds to a question like that and shares their design, it does sort of make us all step back and say, hey, you know, where are we right now and what are we doing? And so, I think it's very interesting to look at our world through children's eyes like that.
Mm-hmm.
What would be a good way for, cause I think there's lots of opportunities here for architects, people who are listening to us right now, who may want to get more involved in children to educate the future like you are,
mm-hmm.
And be influenced by the students that they are influencing. What's some advice for someone who may want to either get involved in your organization or, you know, start a program of their own?
When I first, I've been working in New York for a while, and then I actually came back to Hong Kong where I was born about 3 years ago. So when I first got here, I actually don't have any connection in terms of the schools, in terms of who to talk to. So what I did to promote, I won't continue volunteering. So I had to start, with something. So what I did was actually I set up a little page on my website. I also printed some very small booklet, and I just go to the school dialogue on the website. I just literally send everyone that I see on the email about what I can offer them to do as a volunteer. And, two or three of them actually reply, and then I end up teaching at those school as well. And so I guess to answer your question in a very simple way, I do it for free. I don't think it's actually that hard to tell any school that you want to volunteer. I think they are always, needing more people, needing more professional help. So just simply going to the school and tell them you want to do something with the children, even on one day, I think the school will be probably very happy to accept the invitation. And the second thing is also because we don't have money, we have to be very conservative with the material that we use to teach children. Let's say pencil and scissors, those you kind of have to buy. You can't really just make a brand new scissors out of trash. We try to, in New York, there's an organization called Material for the Arts. You may know about it, but basically all the big corporations, when they have trash, they don't want to throw away. They donate it to this warehouse. They basically have this giant warehouse in Queens, and then all the teachers, if you register as a teacher or if you, register or tell them that you are doing teaching thing, you can go in and grab all the free material. Things are just random. They sometimes give you these Starbucks cups.
Yeah.
That you can make some art project out of. From there, I guess you can grab some material, come up with an idea to build with the kid, and that will be good. And the final thing I would say is to come up with a topic that I think the children will remember. The attention span was so short. Sometimes I find it almost impossible to keep them focused. Many times what I do is that I host a mini competition. Every class I would tell them, we'll build, let's say the other day we were building a car out of newspaper, an actual movable car with a balloon attached to the back so that they can actually just roll it. So I set this as a competition, but whoever won this competition may get a small box of color pencil. So by telling them that, everyone just so excited and motivated that they all feel like they had to finish it. So I feel if people can come up with ideas like that, people will be more engaged and will remember the lessons a bit better. Yeah.
Have you taught many different ages? Or?
It's mostly 6 to 12 right now, but the little one is more rare. The older one, 10 to 12, are kind of my prime focus. The little one is great as well. Yeah, the little one is great as well. But sometimes, depending on the school, some school, the little one may have hard time with the paper. Mm-hmm. They are still learning how to cut their thing. I don't want to compete with other art program they already had. Like, I don't necessarily want to spend the time to tell them how to, you know, do a straight line and things like that. So for the older kid, not too old, but like old enough that they know how to handle, you know, basic craft, then it's easier for me to focus on the idea rather than technical papermaking skill. Yeah. But the younger one are also equally creative. Sometimes they tell me something that the one that will just tell me about the ceiling fan and wind turbine. Yeah. She was actually 6 years old.
yeah. I'm just fascinated by the way the children think, and so I think it would be beneficial for everyone. I think every community probably has similar programs, not exactly what you're doing, but probably has some opportunity for architects to get involved in existing programs or create your own program and introduce it to the school system.
And like
Vicky said, that if you're doing this as a volunteer, there are probably few schools that are going to turn you down. And so it's great to hear your story, Vicky. Thank you very much for joining me here today and sharing your story. Very inspiring. I love to hear what you're doing. I love the way that it's both ways, that you're inspiring the future of the future generation, implanting the ideas of sustainable design and green design in the future of our society. And you're getting back the information and the inspiration and the knowledge of these innocent children. And so it's great to hear that story.
Thank you.
Your website is aoarchitect.us, correct?
Yes.
And you're on Facebook with both Avoid Obvious and Architecture for Children. So it's facebook.com/avoidobvious and facebook.com/architecture for children. I do have that last question that I want to ask you, but before we ask you that question, what's the story behind the Avoid Obvious name of your architecture firm?
Oh,
I love the name. I can't leave without asking that.
When we first began, we were really young. We're still very young. Like, our average age right now is 40 years old among all the team members and partners. So when we first do it, as an architectural firm, people don't think we can do it. So rather than going mainstream with putting my last name at the front of the firm or putting those three letter things, I wanted to, just tell people that we're different. We can do something that other team cannot do. So in a way, we're just kind of like our rebellious mind telling other people that, we can do it as a young firm as well. But as it involved, like, actually a lot of the clients are now getting back to us about this name. Some people love it. Like, some people came to us specifically for this. Like, they hired an architect in New Jersey and they said that I didn't like this guy because they were very conservative in terms of their New Jersey like development, so they wanted something that they wanted to do something not so obvious. So that was kind of interesting for us, having this name. But of course, like, in many ways, we also graduate, like, slowly moving like toward like a bigger firm. So we have to also finding a way to graduate from that name as well.
Right.
But that's kind of like work in progress.
Yeah. Well, it is your brand. You started with it, and it clearly sends a message immediately, and tells the story of who you are and what you do. So it's great for branding. But as you grow, you are a relatively large firm now, doing large projects, that brand may need to evolve as well. And you're probably starting to see some pushback because you're doing larger projects and you're a larger firm, that you may be outgrowing the name.
Right. But it also depends on the language that we use. In China, that name just doesn't work. Like, you can't translate the name directly into avoid the obvious. There's no slang or faces like that. Yeah. So we end up picking something similar but a bit more positive in a sense. We're still learning different cultures as well, and what kind of language is appropriate for that country.
Are you considering a rebrand?
At the moment, not exactly. I'm going to give you maybe a bit more background on the commercial aspect. We do a lot of different things. Sometimes we do design. Like at one point, we were actually doing design for a fashion designer making a handbag. And then when we were much younger, as a firm, and we also did let's say branding for real estate developer, like how to brand their building, doing renderings, 3D modeling to really market their building. That for a design that wasn't actually done by us. And then we also do architecture, urban planning as a firm, and we have this children thing. So in many ways, right now it's just we try to group it into A, B, C, D, like A for architecture, B for branding, C for children, and D for design. So we're still kind of working with this idea right now, I'm not quite sure yet. But how Google work, you have to, in order to get up onto Google, it takes many years of publishing. So our name is already out there, registered with many other sites. So I don't think I will change my name soon, because I will lose all this accreditation.
Well, when you go through that process, I'd love to bring you back and have you talk about that process of how you've taken that name and that brand and have it evolve and turn into what you need it to be. 'Cause I think that's a great story too, and I'd love to hear how it ends. So I'd love to have you back. So let's ask that final question that we always ask here. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think it has to be related to writing apps, in my opinion. Actually, I have been, or my team have been trying to write this app that we call it Carbon App. We do a lot of, let's say, carbon footprint calculation. A lot of them are done in Excel spreadsheet. A lot of them is done manually, looking up at certain carbon, footprint of different product and try to come up with the whole consumption as a whole. I found that very manual, very inefficient. I feel like it gotta be automated in some way. So I feel like writing an apps can help us not only achieve that, but I'll be able to tell my client, look, I'm not just selling architecture. I can help you be very scientific and accurate if I can get this app and present to them. And at the same time, we had this idea as well. The apps can help me make money in a different way. I'm going to use some branding right now. I hope you don't mind.
Not at all. I'd love to hear it.
I was imagining, what if we have this app and then we sell it to McDonald's or partner with them in a way. We consider carbon as a future currency. And then we tell them, hey, look at your menu right now. You have Filet-O-Fish, you have a Big Mac, but they're priced differently just based on the material they use differently. But what if they're priced differently based on the carbon footprint, based on the carbon that they consume? And the carbon they consume can vary on a daily basis. But at the moment, if you go to McDonald's, every day the price is exactly the same. But what if carbon has a way to influence the prices? Maybe today the truck driver doesn't actually drive that far, so the Big Mac is a lot cheaper now just because the carbon footprint is a lot lower. So in many ways, I feel like writing an apps can help an architectural firm to diverse and we know something very well, and but we just wasn't able to get it automated enough so that we can actually sell it to other people as a product or as a tool, so that it become a scalable business. But of course, I haven't really fully worked it out yet. I haven't made any profit out of it yet. But that's actually a little idea I have.
I think it's a great idea to take some of the things, some of the knowledge that we all have as architects, and create an app or a website or some sort of resource that we can use for branding and marketing and helping our clients achieve some useful utility. Will come back to us and become part of who we are and what we are, and potentially earn us some additional supplementary income. So, great idea. Great idea. So, Vicky,
Thank
thank
you.
you very much for coming here today and sharing some time with us, sharing your story here at Entre Architect Podcast.
Thank you.
If you liked what we shared here today, complete show notes and a direct link To download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode169. Share that link with somebody that you think might benefit from the knowledge that we shared here today. And don't forget to visit the website to learn more about Entree Architect Academy, our private online membership program built for you, the small firm entrepreneur architect. Visit the homepage today at entrearchitect.com. My name is Mark Arlepage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. And I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.